Hi, everyone, and welcome to episode 90 of the Medieval Podcast. I'm Danielle Cebulski, also known as the 5-Minute Medievalist. Well, here we are at the end of 2020, and what a year it's been. Maybe unlike other years, 2020 is not one that we want to reflect on particularly, and yet there were a few good things to come out of this year, namely books. This week, Peter Konieczny from Medievalist.net and I took some time to look back on some of our favorite books from the past year, and they cover a wide range of topics and ideas. Without further ado then, let's look back on the slim but significant bright side of 2020, the year's best books. All right, Peter, it's time to talk about some of our favorite books from 2020, the year that will always live in infamy, I think.
Woohoo, yes. Talk about books.
Books are the one good thing to come out of this year, right?
They are. But the one bad thing is, I don't know if it's the same with you, but I haven't been able to read as many new books just because, you know, the libraries have been closed. So.
Yeah. Well, I finally made it through some of the books that were on my to-read shelf because of that. And because I didn't go to Kalamazoo and spend a fortune on new books, I did spend a lot on Amazon, that's for sure. And online bookstores. But I didn't come home with a haul from Kalamazoo, which is the major difference for my reading this year.
Yeah, same here. I wish I missed Kalamazoo. But some of the books I wanted is ones I really, really wanted. And that's the ones I kind of, you know, bought online. And I've done some used book store hunting. So there's a few good ones in Toronto. So I've kind of like dived into those.
Before the lockdown, everybody, before the lockdown.
Yeah, in between the lockdowns here. But yeah. So, unfortunately, you know, like maybe like last year, we had like a ton of different books that we could have looked at. And this year, it's a bit slimmer, I guess, that we had reading up choices. But, you know, I think I found a few really good ones.
Oh, yeah. We definitely have really good ones. So before we get into that, everybody should know that publishers do send us books from time to time, which we love and we read. But we don't get paid to review these books. So any books that we tell you about are ones that we've looked at and that we've loved, or we wouldn't tell you about them at all. So while publishers do send us books, they don't pay us to promote anything. So these are our true favorites, or some of our true favorites from this year.
Indeed.
Okay, Peter, you go first. You have picked three as the major books to talk about, right? So what's your first?
My first, and it's called Le Juvencel. So, and that kind of is a translation that means the young one. And it's a translation of a 15th century text. So it's by an author named Jean de Buhl. And he was like a French military commander in the Hundred Years' War, towards the end of the Hundred Years' War. So he had quite a lot of experience, and he wrote this book. And at first, it seems to be a kind of romance, like literary romance of like, oh, this knight goes on, you know, is learning his trade and he wins battles and sieges and he goes to this kingdom. And they're all like, you know, like all the names are kind of just odd made up names and things like that. And so he wins the princess, and it's like a, you know, happy ever after kind of tale. And that's what it is on the surface. But this book is really meta.
Okay, what do you mean by meta?
What the book is really supposed to be is a guide for young knights. This is kind of a military manual. There's lots of things here where the author says, oh, well, you know, let's stop the narrative and we're going to talk about, you know, how do you conduct a siege, or what are the ways we should treat prisoners of war? And it's all filled with that. So it's kind of like there's a bit of a story, and then they take a time out to kind of explain this. And that was deliberate. It seems to be Jean de Buhl wanted to get people interested in military careers, and this is a fun way to do it. So that is the first level, the first bit of the onion coming out.
Well, that is a man after my own heart, making learning fun for people, getting your ideas across in a way that is not too boring. That's the wheelhouse I want to live in.
But yet there's more. Now, I said, like, he made up all these names and stuff like that. About, like, 10 years after he dies, Jean de Buhl, some of his, like, underlings, his own knights, come write an afterword to this book. And they say, you know, well, the book, you know, we helped with the book, they said. And it's actually based all on Jean de Buhl's life. This is real events where, you know, he just changed the names of everybody to like protect the innocent and stuff like that. But then they say, here are all these people. Here's like this kingdom stands for this place. This guy was this English commander. The battle that we're talking about is this actual battle. So we actually have a really nice history. And they say it's very close. Like he said, we didn't make, like Jean de Beulde didn't make anything up. All the stories are real. These are real things that happen. So when he goes to attack the clothesline of the enemy castle to get some shirts, you know, that's a real thing that happens.
So it's an autobiography as well.
Yes, yes, an autobiography. Like, so I kind of almost a secret autobiography. So it's, so I love it. So if you want to read this as kind of a straightforward romance, you can, although it's not the best romance, it's kind of dry. But if you want to read it like a military manual, learning about that, you know, that's a really kind of effect because, you know, we don't have too many from the Middle Ages about, you know, how to be a soldier. And then we also have this history of the Hundred Years' War, especially the last 20, 30 years of it, where the French are defeating the English and finally drive them out.
Do you find that the author has really embellished his part in the story?
It's hard to know. Like in a sense, like the narrator of the book kind of is not the main character. There are obviously some embellishments. Like he gets a princess. He defeats the princess's father, you know, when he kind of turns on him. So there are kind of embellishments in that. But, you know, there are times when they don't do well. There's times, you know, like there's setbacks, things like that. So it's a very kind of interesting work in that way. So, yeah, it's a slight embellishment. And one thing that I wish it really has, and he doesn't include it, is he doesn't tell about Joan of Arc, because he was one of Joan of Arc's companions. And he leaves her out of the story completely. So there's no, like, female Mary of Simon or something like that, you know, that leads the troops or anything like that.
Well, then maybe people might have gotten wise to the fact that it's autobiographical, you know.
Yeah.
Plus, I'm not sure that everybody was a big fan of Joan by the end, even on the French side. So we might not want us a manual telling you about warfare to be like, hey, women can lead. Maybe that's not, you know, part of his agenda.
That's true. This is a book for men, you know, so. The women are eye candy, I guess, in this kind of like princesses to be conquered.
That's a shock. Well, I am really looking forward to reading that one because I'm going to steal it from you at the earliest opportunity.
Yeah. No, I think like if you're into medieval military history, this is probably a book that you're going to have on your shelf. It's a translation done by Craig Taylor and Jane Taylor. They've done kind of a couple of others. This is for Boydell. It's a really interesting kind of work, and I'm really glad that it's come out because I've heard bits about this story for years and years, but I've never had a chance to look at it because it's the first English translation.
Well, that is fantastic. Well, that is a good way to start this podcast off with such a good book. I actually don't have any primary sources on my list for maybe the first time, and that is partly because I didn't go to Kalamazoo because that's usually where I get my primary sources from. So I have three books, two of them, and I only put my favorite books on the podcast. So two of them have actually been podcast episodes, and one is going to be a podcast episode. So I'll leave that one for last. But the first book that I wanted to talk about is one that I did an interview for on the podcast a few months ago, and that's The Year 1000, When Explorers Connected the World and Globalization Began. And that's by Valerie Hansen. We had her on the podcast a few months ago. And I really like this book because, like, I think it's hard to get out of graduate school without being a specialist in some way. Like, I have a master's, but I do specialize in England and France and literature especially. So I don't have a huge range of knowledge of the stuff that's going on outside of those ranges, although I'd like to learn more. And if you're a publisher that's listening to this, you know, feel free to send us books that are about medieval areas that are other than Europe, because we do get a whole lot about England all the time. But The Year 1000 really spoke to me because it talked about what was going on each continent. So even though you learned about Europe in so many books about the Middle Ages, you don't usually learn about what's going on other continents. And you especially don't learn what's going on North American, Central American, Southern American areas of the world. So I really enjoyed that book because it talked about the entire globe in lots of different ways, except for Australia. We didn't find out what was going on in Australia. But that's because Valerie is connecting trade routes. And as far as I remember, there's nothing that's going to the Antipodes at that time. at least not large scale. So I really enjoyed this book because I got to learn about China. I got to learn about Northern African nations, Southern African nations. I got to learn more about the Inca. It was an amazing book and I really enjoyed it. So that's one that I would recommend to people is The Year 1000, just to get an overview from like a snapshot in time that really kind of connects what's going on in a world that was a lot more connected than I think people imagine.
Yeah, I agree. Like this was a book that was going to be on my honorable mentions list. So I'm really glad you had a chance to talk about it. Yeah, I've been more and more interested in the kind of globalization aspect of when we look at medieval history and to learn the kind of interconnections. So yeah, like having this was a real, treat. I've done very, very little looking at the Americas in the medieval past. And so this is a nice way of kind of growing into it. And then trying to kind of place where the kind of centers of power and centers of trade are around the year 1000. So I really like, how she kind of put it together and all the different kinds of societies and especially where they kind of intermingle.
Yeah. I mean, this was a really, I want to say eye-opening book because it told me a lot about what technologies were contemporary, right? What's going on in China, technologically speaking, what's going on in Africa, technologically speaking. And so that was really an important part of the book to me because I always knew that these different continents, different countries were connected by trade, but I wanted to know what they were trading at that time. And so it's really interesting to find out, like in terms of material culture, what is being traded at that time? What's important? How do we know this stuff? And so it was a really good look at that, I think, a global picture, which is something that I haven't got enough of in my past reading, something that I want to learn more about. And now I feel like I have a firm footing, at least, from around the year 1000 of what's going on so that I can build from there. The Year 1000 by Valerie Hansen. I like that one a lot.
Yeah, excellent work. And yeah, I'm glad she was on the podcast too. So
yeah, and she was very lovely on the podcast. So if you want to listen and learn more about it, I encourage everyone to go back to that episode earlier this year. All right, Peter, what's next?
Next one is a collection of essays. It's called Making the Medieval Relevant, How Medieval Studies Contribute to Improving Our Understanding of the Present. Edited by Chris Jones, Connor Kostick, and Klaus Oshima. 14 essays, just kind of giving you, how the medieval it can be relevant to the contemporary world. I think this is kind of a theme that, a lot of historians, especially in medieval studies, have been talking about. Like, a lot of people are very, very much interested in the Middle Ages, but how is it useful for today's society, right? So they kind of look at that and they kind of look at here are ways that learning about the Middle Ages is actually helping us in the present. There's one about the famous antibacterial medication that's kind of devised from an Anglo-Saxon health book, the Elite book. So we have that. We have, things about environmental, such as flooding in the past, volcanoes and explosions and things like that, how that affected and how that's kind of changed. So in that environmental aspect, but also looking at how people just, reflected on things like relics and how that kind of changes new perspectives today. And what can people learn about the Middle Ages, even in places like New Zealand?
Yeah, New Zealanders, you can learn a lot.
I'm sure the Kiwis can learn about, medieval things. And
yeah, they already are, is what I'm laughing at. Okay, let's go.
We're Tolkien's.
I have a question for you about this book. Let's get back on track.
All right,
This book, who's it aimed at? Is it aimed at academics or is it aimed at...
I think it's mostly aimed at academics. It's from De Gruyter, but the idea is like, hey, we want to teach these things. The one another thing that really recommends is open access. So anyone that's listening, you can go on and you can read the entire book online. And I guess we can thank De Gruyter Publishing for that.
And we're definitely going to put that link in the show notes for people to look at, right? Along with links to all of the other books.
That's right. That's right. I noticed by a couple other books, the Middle Ages is kind of a hotbed, in a sense of debates of, how people appropriate, misappropriate, what we learn from it, what what we shouldn't be taking out of it. So there are other kind of books the last year or so that have also dealt with that, right?
Yeah. And we're going to get to one of those shortly. Okay, so that's a good book and everyone can access that. Awesome. Mm-hmm. And that's great for the people who are up and coming in medieval studies, especially because in 2020, we have journalists all over the place trying to make the medieval relevant. So if we can get our people on it, that's even better. So my second choice is one that's actually from a recent podcast, and that is The White Ship by Charles Spencer. Let me find the subtitle. The White Ship, Conquest, Anarchy, and the Wrecking of Henry I's Dream. And so if you listen to that podcast, you'll find that Charles Spencer is just a really great storyteller. Like you really get that he feels what's going on in these moments of history. And the White Ship disaster is one that really shaped England. And I think when you look at the fact that if it wasn't for the White Ship disaster, the Plantagenets would not be a dynasty, and they really affected all over Europe and further afield. So it's an important moment. But what I really liked about this book was a couple of things. First of all, it really connected, again, this moment in history that I don't spend all that much time on. Like, I can list the kings of England for you, but I always think of the kings that come after the conqueror as being kind of far apart in history. And Henry I is actually the conqueror's son, even though he's not the first king to come after William the Conqueror. So there were all sorts of threads that Charles talked about that really connect this moment for me in my mind, what's going on in different places in Europe, etc. So that was really good for me. But the crux of this book that really spoke to me was the actual disaster itself and that human story about it. So like the central part of the book, central chapters and the central story of the book is the sinking of the White Ship. And when you're reading this book, you really feel it. You really feel like you're there. You really understand what people are going through. You put yourself in their shoes. And I think that that is a great way to get at history. So that is really what spoke to me about this book. And for people who are kind of dipping their toes into history, this is the right kind of book to read, because it gives you those human stories, those connections that draw us to history. And if you're somebody who's like intensely into history, then this is a book that you can enjoy and maybe not have to like think about 1001 footnotes, you know? So I think it's a good book for everybody. So I really like that one.
Yeah, it's a great topic. It's one of those topics that if you go through university, you'll probably never hear about it, because it is a very big political event, but it doesn't have lasting consequence of, you know, the march of history, right? Like you have Henry, and then you have Stephen, then you have Henry II. You always kind of hear about that. You rarely hear about the people that don't become king.
Yeah, that's it. That's it. I mean, because the central person who dies on the White Ship never became king, right? So he's kind of a footnote to history, like you say. But when you put him in a central place, it's really an interesting story, as you say. It's not available yet in the outside of Europe, as far as I know, but you can order it from his own website, or you can order it online. Just so you know, the other ones that we're talking about should be available everywhere now. All right, what do you have next?
Indeed. Well, this book might not be quite available everywhere, because like literally I just got it about 2 weeks ago, and I ordered it like kind of right off the press. This could be my favorite book in a long, long time. It's called The Book of Charlatans.
That is so Peter right there. All right, tell us about The Book of Charlatans.
All right, so it's by a guy named Jamal al-Jabari. He was like a 13th century writer, and that's all. We don't know anything more than what he has in his book. He may have been quite involved in this, but this is a book about scams and cons that he learned about in the middle, in say, you know, medieval Syria or Egypt, that kind of area. There's some crazy things that he talks about, like the guys that dress up an ape and pretend he was like a prince from India that got magically tricked into becoming an ape, and they're pawning him off to like crowds that like, we need to raise money so we can go back to India.
It's like the Nigerian prince scheme, but with the monkey.
Yeah, yeah. So it's all sorts of different areas. So we have like dentist tricks, right? Like how dentists might scam you, right? The old put a worm into a pill and put it into your mouth and then draw out the worm trick, which he, yeah. So he says, beware of these things. There are, you know, tricks of like, you know, where secret treasure is buried, how to get past the traps. You know, like the one where the statue's carrying swords and attacking you. Indiana Jones type stuff. So
that's what I was thinking.
So he has that.
And wait, how do you get past that? You're going to leave us hanging?
Oh, okay. you dig underneath. You dig a hole and you go under. So, because he's just going to go straight forward. But so, yeah, we've got like that. We've got like, you know, kind of tales of how thieves break in to houses, like get on with their roof, and how they break in, and then how to make sure people aren't inside sleeping. So
how do you do that?
Well, you take a turtle
What?
Yeah, you take a turtle, put a candle on its back, lower them down. Then the turtle gets to walk around the place, and it gives the added benefit.
It's like the medieval drone.
Yeah. I thought it was really cool. You get the added benefit of being able to look around the room and figure out what you want to take.
You just have to have some patience. So you have to do it early in the night.
These are all kind of scams. And so Al-Jabari could have been actually one of these people involved in these scams. He could have been a reformed con artist.
Oh, that's the best kind.
You know, so, and that's where, and this was apparently a really popular book in the 13th century. Lots of copies exist. So yeah, once I heard this was coming out, first day it came out, I ordered it through Amazon. So.
Now, do you think this is one of those books where it's like, we are definitely not condoning this behavior or encouraging it? Wink, wink.
Oh, yeah. Like he always kind of just says, you know, like a kind of like a little line, you know, beware of these tricks. So at the very end, there's some tricks that, you know, he finds, you know, less appealing, but others he seems to be, you know, like, this is a really interesting way of doing it. I've even found that stuff related to warfare. Apparently, you know, it's a good, you know, get your onion juice and put it on a sword.
Oh, that's mean.
Apparently it works every time.
Well, it sounds like an awesome book.
Yeah. And, you know, I want to, I'll shout out to also to the publishers. It's New York University Press. And they've had a kind of a series of books about, like, the medieval Islamic world. It's like the third one I bought this year from them. And it just seems like, yeah, there are lots of wonderful kind of texts from that region that are kind of just fascinating reads for anybody. So, so I would, you know, highly recommend. This is going to be something I think I'm going to be talking about quite a bit over the years, because I think I can mine this for all sorts of wonderful bits.
So thank you. And why it was New York University, you said?
Yep.
Thank you, NYU, for making Peter a favorite at cocktail parties when we start having cocktail parties again. Okay, so my last book is one that I've just recorded this interview for. It's going to be a podcast that comes out in early January. And this is a book that arrived in my mailbox and by surprise, and I knew that I had to read it, and it didn't disappoint, actually. This is a book called Legions of Pigs in the Early Medieval West, and it's by Jamie Kreiner. And this Legions of Pigs, I mean, it already had me hooked, but, and this is something I said to her as well, it's really difficult to write an academic book in a way that is extremely readable, that has a good pace to it, that is just something that kind of sweeps you along. And she has done that. So not only are pigs interesting, but she's actually a really gifted writer. So I needed to say that up front. You know, as a writer myself, I really appreciate good writing. But Legions of Pigs not only tells you about, like, pigs, like everything you ever wanted to know about medieval pigs is in this book. But it also is a very scholarly work in that it talks about the place of pigs in medieval thought, right? So not only were they thinking about pigs in terms of, like, how do I eat them best, but also what is the place of a pig in the universe, and what does that make us think about the universe, and how can we take a pig's perspective? What can that teach us about the universe? So it's got a lot of philosophical ideas in it, which makes it, you know, a great book for scholars, but also for the people who want to know about things like, what was a pig like and how did you eat it? And what were the challenges of raising pigs in the Middle Ages? Because they are actually a really challenging animal to raise, especially when you have wooden fences and things like that. So that was a really great conversation that I think people are going to enjoy that we had. And it's going to come out early January, like I said. But I do really recommend the book. Like I said, it was a surprise. I didn't expect it, but pigs hooked me. And then it was just a really enjoyable read.
I'll want to borrow that book from you. So we might be trading a few books. I'm always interested in how, you know, medieval people thought differently of kind of these almost everyday objects or things that were always kind of present. And like, oh, this is how they kind of viewed them or interacted. For me, pigs are like an animal I visit, you know, when I visit a farm, I've seen them, or I, you know, have bacon. And I don't think of them as too much, but, you know, I think if you have a more, you know, connection and also a philosophical religious ideas, right, on that. So, yeah, that's one thing I always fascinated in that kind of aspect. So that should, I think, be a really interesting read.
It is. It is. And yeah, like you say, it's all about the everyday detail for me. But when you think about it, pigs are a great intersection for talking about things like religion. When you think about dietary needs or dietary restrictions and things like that, and the philosophical ideas behind it. So yeah, it's a good book for scholars, and for people who are not scholars, it's really readable, a really readable introduction to pigs in general. So that is my final. If I had to pick a top three, I've got The Year 1000, I've got The White Ship, and I've got Legions of Pigs. Those would be my top three. But we have other ones that we like that we want to give a brief shout out to as well. So what have you got a shout out for briefly, Peter?
Yeah, very briefly. It's just, and Mark, I haven't had a chance to actually, I've only read a very first introduction for this book, but it's called The Lost Archive, Traces of a Caliphate in a Cairo Synagogue. It's by Marina Rostow. And it's she's looking at what kind of government and official records exist. This is based on the famous kind of Jewish synagogue archive in Cairo. When the Fatimids issued an order on, like, you know, trade restrictions, that kind of stuff is really lost to history, but she's being able to kind of find it. I think she's been on a couple of lectures I've seen on YouTube where she's been talking about it. So I'm, you know, kind of really interested in, and again, that book, I think, could be very useful for historians because it could open up a lot of doors into that kind of history of administration.
Yeah, well, I think that last sentence, history of administration, maybe doesn't sell it to everybody. But yeah, when you're talking about synagogues in Cairo, that is, like I was just saying about the pig thing, like an intersection of all sorts of aspects of society, medieval society, that's fascinating, I think. And administration is fascinating too, but maybe not to me, but I'd probably find other things from this book I could love, I have no doubt. The first runner-up on my book list, and I really haven't ranked these, but, you know, is one that I featured on the podcast by Kelsey Wilson Lee a few months ago called Daughters of Chivalry, The Forgotten Children of Edward I. And I really like this book because I, as I said on that podcast at that time, I assumed that because we never heard anything about Edward I's daughters, that there wasn't much that we knew about them. And it turns out that we know a lot about them. And they were hugely influential at the time. So again, this is another really readable book about characters that I think are unforgettable. I really liked a bunch of these women. And yeah, I think everyone should know their stories. So Daughters of Chivalry is another one I think people should read. And they can listen to Kelsey Wilson Lee talk about it on the podcast earlier this year.
You know, I've gotten here another one. It's actually from 2019, so I'm being a bit of a cheat, but it's called Whose Middle Ages? Teachable Moments for an Ill-Used Past. It's just another collection of essays, quite a lot. I think it's more unlike the other book I mentioned. This is more aimed at students and the kind of general public. So it kind of deals with, like, you know, kind of issues like racism, how Middle Ages get misappropriated, like, say, by the Nazis, things like that. Popular media portrayals, things like that. Again, you know, very kind of short, usually a lot of just short essays, just 3-4 pages long. I kind of recommend that too, especially if you want to kind of look at talking about the Middle Ages today.
Yeah. Yeah. And along the same lines, I wanted to mention The Devil's Historians, How Modern Extremists Abuse the Medieval Past, which was a podcast earlier this year with Amy Kaufman and Paul B. Sturdivant. That was another great book where they really examine how the Middle Ages is misused, abused, and what we can do about it. And I think that's really important. I remember asking them that question, like, what can we do about this? What are some of the ways that we can counteract that? And so it's a book that not only gets into how the Middle Ages is being used in destructive ways, but also what can we do about it? How do we look into this further and what can we do to change it? So The Devil's Historians is another good one.
Yeah, and they've done a lot of great work on the public medievalist, and I think this book is just an extension of that. So yeah, I'm glad we get to mention that as well. A couple books I just want to mention just because they're by columnists here on medievalist.net. Alice Sullivan got her first book. It's a co-edited a volume called Byzantium and Eastern European Visual Culture in the Late Middle Ages. So it looks like at how the kind of influence between the Byzantine world and Eastern Europe when it comes to art and architecture. So, you know, congratulations to Alice on that. And also Ken Monshine has a new book called On Time, A History of Western Timekeeping. And I think I love that it deals with the Middle Ages.
Well, he's a medievalist, so yeah. that would make a lot of sense. But yeah, small things like timekeeping are actually big things. So it's good that he has this book out. So congrats to Ken, too.
Alas, you don't have a book out this year.
I don't have a book out this year. I have a book out next year, which I can mention in a second. But the last book that I wanted to mention is one that I've only taken a brief look at, but I know it's going to be a game changer in the classroom for sure and probably wider. And that is Medieval Warfare, a Reader. And that's edited by Kelly DeVries and Michael Livingston. And it's just a collection of primary sources, as are all of that series from U of T Press. But the collection that they have is really, really good because it gives you things like lists of inventory items that people had on the battlefield or in preparation for battles. It has stuff about before a war, after a war, the consequences of war. So things like Michael's written about trauma. So there's that poem that he has worked on before that's in here. But it just really gets at warfare from the perspective of the people of the Middle Ages. And I think that is going to be a game changer in, like I said, in the classroom and hopefully elsewhere as well. So I haven't delved into that as much as I'd like to. That's just come to me, that book. But I know that it's going to be one that people will come back to again and again, because I think warfare is always a draw when it comes to the Middle Ages. So I think people are going to read that. But you asked about, I'm working on a book called How to Live Like a Monk. Medieval Wisdom for the Modern World with Abbeville Press. And that's not finished yet, but it should come out next year.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. That would be a fun read. But I want you to get to doing a book a year. So when we do this, it's like, hey, let's talk about Danielle's book for 20 minutes.
Well, I mean, you can get my other books. I mean, right now I have The 5-Minute Medievalist, which was a compilation of stuff I wrote for medievalist.net. I put that out in 2016, if you can believe that. Then I did The 5-Minute Medievalist Guide to Surviving the Zombie Apocalypse, which is a little book that you can stick in your car in case you need to escape from zombies. And then Life in Medieval Europe, Fact and Fiction came out last year. And before I could do a book tour, COVID. So it kind of, you know, it was a bummer. I have all these books in my basement that I want to get to people. So maybe when the new book comes out, I'll be able to go and do like a tour and people can look at both books.
You were so close to going to England to that festival and just, hey, I'm going to talk about my book. So
Yeah. I was all booked to go to the Chalk Valley History Festival and Leeds as well. But that's okay. That's okay. These things will come back in the future. But speaking of, you want to get more productivity out of me, as you always say, this is episode 90. Of the Medieval Podcast. So through like turmoil after turmoil, I have churned out 45 episodes a year, 46 by the end of 2020. Yeah, so 90 episodes of the Medieval Podcast, if you can believe that.
You know, it's been awesome, and I've enjoyed every one of them. Thank you so much. You know, it's and thank you all to the guests as well. It's been great. And yeah, you know, you're working fairly good.
Wow, so much wrong with that sentence there. But this is probably the right time to wrap it up, I think.
Indeed.
So this episode is going to come out just before Christmas. So whether you celebrate Christmas or something else, whether you celebrate just getting together with your family or whether you're celebrating apart from your family. Both Peter and I can actually speak for you, I think, to say that we hope that you all have a really great holiday and a safe one.
Yes, I totally concur.
And that goes to our guests, our Patreon patrons, the people who follow us online. Everybody, just want to send you best wishes from me and from Peter, because maybe I could say it better than Peter. I don't know.
All I can say is Merry Christmas and Happy Holidays.
Yeah, Happy Holidays, everybody. For those of you creating your own books, you'll be happy to know that the next session of the Medieval Masterclass for Creators is starting January 8th, and registration is already filling up. This is a 6-week online class that I've created, featuring a total of 6 experts who walk you through cooking, combat, blacksmithing, textiles, everyday objects, and architecture in a way that actually shows you how it was done. You'll see how food looks, how a blacksmith creates, and what colors you can get from medieval dyes, along with manuscript images, museum artifacts, a bibliography, a community of fellow creators, and access to my brain to help you work through plot holes. I built the Medieval Masterclass for creators to help you make your own book dreams come true. So take me up on it. You can find out more at medievalmasterclass.com. Thank you to all of our patrons on patreon.com whose kindness and generosity over the past year has made such a difference. Whether you're in it for subscriptions to Medieval Warfare magazine or the Medieval magazine, membership in our book club, our exclusive maps by Tina Ross, or just because you're awesome, every bit of your patronage is appreciated. For more information on how to become a patron of the Medieval Podcast, check out patreon.com/medievalists. For everything from books to even more books, follow medievalists.net on Facebook or Twitter at medievalists. You can follow me, Danielle Sabalski, on social media at 5MIN Medievalist or 5-Minute Medievalist. And you can find my books, including Life in Medieval Europe, Fact and Fiction, at your favorite online bookstores. Our music is Beyond the Warriors by Guy Frog. Thanks for listening. However and whatever you're celebrating, have yourself a safe and happy holiday.